Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Talking Seahawks and controversy at VMAX. Seattle Times reporter Bob Condotta joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bob, it's really interesting to hear the two big stories around Mike McDonald's arrival to Seattle being he took down the hoop, he took down the pictures. What was the reaction from players and maybe even among reporters to this news?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it's a real surprise. You bring in a new coach to change things, right? I mean, that's sort of the point, is to get a new voice and a new way of doing things and all that, because you didn't feel like the previous way was working. So, I sort of expected it, that there would be some changes like that as we went along. And, all that stuff's fairly cosmetic, you know. I mean, the more important stuff is obviously what the changes that we're going to see on the field and how they do things there. And I don't think, you know, a picture is going to matter whether they win or lose a game, come the fall. But, certainly it is, he's obviously trying to send a message that this is a whole new era. And, you know, that it's time to, you know, we have to, as Leonard Williams put it pretty eloquently yesterday, you know, just sort of, creating their own identity, and that it's time to kind of start living, not live off that era anymore. And obviously, you know, there's basically nobody left on on-field roles anymore from that era. You know, there's no player left from it. None of the coaches were around during any of those times, really. Carl Scott being the only holdover, and he was only here for 2 years. So, you know, it is sort of a completely new team. And I think he's just kind of, making some of those moves to make it clear that this is a, you know, this is a new team and everything's starting over.
Pete Carroll is all about his messaging. What most coaches are, right? Especially head coaches. What's the message? What's the philosophy? Have you been able to kind of hear or see what the biggest difference is in Mike McDonald's message and philosophy when comparing it to Pete Carroll and his messages and philosophies?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I can yet say exactly how McDonald is messaging to the players. I mean, we haven't really seen a practice or anything like that yet. But, you know, I he's obviously talked a lot about chasing edges, I think that's a little more of a new age business term, right? Chasing edges than I think with Pete, we tended to hear a lot more of sort of appealing to emotion and the heartstrings and things like that. And I think with McDonald, it's going to be a little bit more the other way. It's going to be a little bit more of a business-like manner, I think. I don't know that you're going to ever hear about Mike McDonald, you know, breaking a chalkboard at a team meeting and stuff like that. I think he's going to be a lot more about, this is how we're going to do things, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is how I'm going to teach you how to do it. And that's sort of going to be that. And, you know, and behind the scenes, they're going to be doing the coaches will be doing the chasing edges, which is, you know, kind of a term for how do you maximize your return on investment, right? And I think that's what they're going to be trying to do in every way that they do things like that. So, you got a coach that's half the age that Pete Carroll was and kind of grew up in a different era of how to do things in a lot of ways. And Pete grew up in San Francisco during the 60s and 70s. And so that always sort of influenced everything he did. And, you know, Mike McDonald, grew up in the 90s and the 2000s. And so, I think that's the influence you're really going to see that's a lot different.
I think it's what I am most curious about is what happens with a new head coach if you start losing. Like, how do you keep the belief in something that you haven't proven yet? What are you most curious about when it comes to Mike McDonald and the beginning of a new tenure here in Seattle?
Yeah, you're 1,000% right about that. I mean, that's always the thing with a new coach, everything always sounds good in the beginning.
Right.
And then it's once you get Mike Tyson's famous saying about a boxing match, you know, it's what happens once you get hit square in the face that determines what happens from there. And that's what we're not going to see that until September and until they start playing games. And then what does happen? And you are going to lose games in the NFL. I mean, there's only one team ever that didn't lose a game in a season. So, it's an inevitable fact of life. You're going to lose some games. And then, so how do you roll with that? But, my sense is that, and John Snyder talked about this and when they hired him, is that he's a very even-keeled personality. You know, he doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. And I think that's, you know, my hunch, if I had to guess, is that's how you're going to see him publicly portray it. You know, I think he'll understand that, you know, the bosses are part of it. So, you know, we just get back together on Monday and move on from there. But for sure, you know, it is what, you know, how do you handle that adversity when it comes? And, you know, and it's not just in wins and losses, but, you know, the adversity of if you suddenly lose a star player to injury, you know, how do you deal with that? And to remake your plan. So that there's a lot of things that can happen. You know, that good news is he learned from one of the best in the business. I mean, having been with John Harbaugh for all those years, I think that's one of the things that people have always been so impressed about John Harbaugh, is how he has such an even-keeled personality and really knows how to ride out the highs and lows of an NFL season. And so, you know, I think that's one of the things that did attract them to Mike McDonald, is I think they feel like he's sort of matured beyond his years in those ways.
Bob, what's your hunch when it comes to the quarterback position? Me personally, I think obviously you get Sam Howell, you give up a third round pick. You did pick up a couple of picks on further along in the draft, but not everyone, but there are rumors going around and speculation that look, they still might grab a quarterback early. I don't put it past them grabbing one late. But if you just have to go off of, you know, what you think and what you feel, how do you think this whole quarterback situation plays out?
Yeah, well, I think part of what happened is I think they went to the combine, got a sense that the top four quarterbacks were not going to be available at 16. And so that at that point, it became assessing every other quarterback on the roster or who would be available in the draft, and then who else might be available via trade. And when they got the idea that Sam Howell was going to be available via trade, you know, they measured him against basically, I think, every other quarterback other than those top four guys who I don't think they had a chance, who they felt like they were going to have a chance to get. And so I think that's why they did that, because I think they feel like Sam Howell can be as good a prospect as everybody else. So, you know, as John said to us when we asked him about it, you know, trading for Howell eliminated the need to have to draft a quarterback. But it doesn't eliminate the possibility that they could, because if for some reason something crazy happens and somebody lands on their lap at 16 that they're not expecting, or, you know, that maybe there's some trade kind of thing that were to happen and you could really get somebody that you weren't expecting, you could go do that. But, you know, it sort of eliminated that they have to do that. But I agree with you totally about someone somewhere else. I would, you know, one way or the other, they're going to add a quarterback to the roster, whether it's drafting or an undrafted free agent signee. And, you know, and I think there's a few guys that some people think could be both. You know, there's some guys that are kind of either late round picks or might not get picked at all that you could sign later. So I think the Seahawks will firmly have their eyes on that group. And again, if there's somebody that maybe people are viewing as a second or third round pick right now, but for some reason he falls to the fourth or fifth or something like that, I think they could definitely jump at that.
Hey, I was listening to a former local reporter. Well, he was with ESPN, but Shiel Kapadia. He's now with The Ringer. And he and his co-hosts were listing the top five GMs under the most pressure in this draft or facing the most pressure. And they had John Schneider as one of them. I also think, Bob, you can make the argument like, well, I don't know how high the expectations are for the Seahawks. Maybe there's not a ton of pressure. Do you think that he's facing a lot of pressure to have an excellent class? Or do you think that, you know, this is something where people are going to give a little grace to this team?
I mean, I think he's under, I would say he's under sort of a different kind of pressure now, because it does stop with him. I mean, he's, you know, it's been made very clear. He is the final word now on all personnel matters. They, you know, they changed his job title to indicate that. And, you know, I think they always portrayed everything as a real collaborative decision and stuff like that. But also, you know, I think everybody always felt like Pete ultimately kind of had veto power on everything they did. And so you could always kind of point to Pete as sort of the guy that, you know, if you really wanted to blame somebody for something, you could sort of say, well, this wouldn't have happened though if Pete didn't sign off on it. But now everything is John. You know, he's leading up the effort for the draft and who they're going to pick. And I think he's, you know, clearly going to be the guy that ultimately is going to make the decisions on all this stuff. And so, you know, in that sense, I think it's just, I don't know if it's more pressure necessarily. I mean, you know, I think there's always a lot of pressure to make sure you capitalize what you have in the draft. But I do think it's a different kind of pressure. But, you know, at the moment, they only have one pick in the first 81. And that's you know, due to an aggressive move they made to get Leonard Williams, who they did keep. So that's, you know, that's sort of a lot of the rest of your draft there is having done that. But, you know, that does put a lot of pressure on you to make sure you get that first pick right. You know, you need that guy to be a big contributor, or obviously they could trade down and get more picks. But, you know, whatever you do with that 16th pick, you got to make sure that works, because you know, you don't have a whole lot of other draft ammo there in a class that sort of, depending on who you listen to, is, you know, okay all the way through it, but maybe isn't the deepest class ever. So the idea that, you know, if you just load up on late round picks, you're going to hit on a bunch of guys, you know, who knows if that's going to happen. So, you know, it is a class where I think you want to make sure you hit that. But, you know, in John, in general, I mean, he's got a contract that runs through the 2027 draft. And I kind of view it as he's got a couple years now of leading this thing. You know, it's not all going to rest on what happens next season, but, you know, he essentially hired Mike McDonald to replace Pete, and now he's in charge of the personnel. And I think they've got 2 or 3 years to sort of show this is working, or, you know, then more decisions will have to be made about the fact that it's not working. And, you know, so I don't think this year is a make or break year necessarily, but I do think over the next 2 or 3 years, for sure, that it is.
Bob, this offensive line has had some movement over the past 5, 6, 7, 8, I don't know how many years you want to count. And at number 16, Troy Faltano has been mocked to the Seattle Seahawks. Say they don't go offensive lineman at number 16. How do you view this offensive line as a stand? You got Lincoln Tomlinson, who's been signed. You bring over Nick Harris to compete at the center spot. Are you confident that this line as it stands today is better than it was last year?
The only reason I would say it could be better is the health of the tackles. I think the tackle spot's better, because I think, you know, I think they're, from everything we understand, Abe Lucas should be, the surgery he had should take care of things, and he should be healthier going into the season. You know, Abe was never really healthy last year. If you recall, he started missing time, and, you know, during the offseason program right around now. And I think he ended up, you know, he was dealing with that all year. So I don't think he ever was able to play to his potential at all. And then Charles Cross obviously got hurt in the first game, and I think he dealt with that for a lot of the year. And so I think having those two guys healthier and a year experience, and then adding George Fan, which I think is a really underrated thing they did. But, yeah, you know, I think that helps a lot to solidify the depth. You know, you're not going to go, you know, no offense, but you're not going to go straight from them to either Stone Forsyth or Jay Curran like they had to do last year. You know, you'll go with a guy who has, you know, 100 NFL games or whatever under his belt. And so, you know, and then Stone Forsyth now has actually, you know, played for most of a season. So you have a much more stable situation at tackle. And then I think the center position is to me, at the moment, it looks like maybe it's just a wash. I think Evan Brown was dependable, but, you know, I think he's not back for reasons. And I think they feel like they can get better there with what they have. The guard spots to me are still a little bit of a mystery. I do fully expect them to address that in the draft. I don't know if they'll do it in the first round. You know, I think, you know, whether you want to go guard, you know, have one pick in the top 81 and go with a guard. We'll see if that happens. I'm leaning much more toward, they'll go with a defensive player there, especially if they can find somebody who, you know, depending on who falls in their lap there. I feel like there's maybe more potential difference makers on defense that would be there at 16 than there might be with offensive linemen. But, you know, we'll see on that. I don't think they're done at all. I think they'll address it in the draft. And then I think there's still, you know, a few kind of guys similar to, you know, who they've been looking at that could be available as well after the draft if they feel like they haven't adequately filled their hole there.
Bob, last one here. The Commanders did something I've never seen before. They brought in 4 quarterbacks on the same trip. What are your thoughts around that? Me personally, I look at that situation, I go, man, if I'm out there hitting the streets dating, Bob, I ain't bringing all the same girls to the same restaurant. Like, what are we doing here? Essentially, these visits are dates. Have you heard of anything like that? What are your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, that was a little weird. I mean, it's a little different, though, because this isn't college where you have to make the player commit to you. This is the other way around, where you're going to pick the guy, and then he's stuck with you, you know, whether you want to be or not, unless you want to try the Eli Manning thing or whatever, or John Elway. If you ever get John Elway, sort of did that, too, of forcing your way out of the team that can draft you. But, you know, I think any of those quarterbacks will end up happily signing there. You know, you don't have a lot of choice, really. So I think from that standpoint, you know, it was for sure, it's a little bit strange. It sounded like they brought them all in, but then they were doing kind of working them out differently, so they weren't all together the whole time on these things. It sounded like they were kind of having their own schedules once they all got there. So I don't know, maybe they felt like it made sense from a scheduling standpoint. You know, sometimes that becomes an issue with these guys where, you know, they don't all want to be traveling the whole time during this whole process. So you know, maybe they ran it by him and they figured then, and they decided it would be okay that way. But, you know, again, the NFL can be a harsh business, and a lot of times you can kind of, you know, like I say, whoever they draft, you know, I'm sure is going to sign the contract and end up playing for them. It's not like they're going to turn it down because of that.
He is Bob Condotta covering the Seahawks for the Seattle Times. Make sure you're tracking his work during next week's draft, seattletimes.com. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, thanks all you guys. Yeah.
All right, let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, one of the biggest changes we will see in 2024 will be the kickoff. Bill Belichick thinks the rules will affect personnel you'll see on the field during returns. Agree or disagree?
Man, this is why Bill, I mean, other coaches probably thought about this, but I didn't think about this. Because I remember back in my day, 2008, right? You could link up your wall in front of the returner. And who they put back there? Big boys. It's big boys, number 60-some, number 70-some, that you do not want to run into. And then things change. You can't link up, so they move to more linebackers type. He says, personnel is going to be bigger now with this return. And why is it going to be bigger? Because there's less room for guys to... or there's less space in between the return team and the kickoff team. So that makes complete sense. Maybe we do see a couple more defensive linemen out there. Maybe we do see a bit more linebackers out there. But that was interesting because I never thought of that aspect of the kickoff rules changing. Less space means you can get bigger guys out there who are just good at blocking, mm-hmm. getting their paws on them in and opening up a hole for the returner. So, no, I like it, and I think that that's true. We're going to see different types of personnel. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go back to the Seahawks kickoff return team last year, watch that film, and just see what type of players they have last year, what type of players are going to have this year.
Second down. What are signs that Seahawks head coach Mike McDonald is slowly making his house a home at VMAC?
Well, we talked about one part already. He's taking down the pictures. Taking down pictures of Richard Sherman, Pete Carroll, Bobby Wagner. And I'm not mad at that move at all. I think you leave a few up. I think you leave the Super Bowl celebrations up because that's such a big part of this team's history. But he's also, I'm listening to the way Leonard Williams is talking about the situation. Devin Witherspoon, I heard, talk about the situation. And it just sounds like if you know Pete Carroll and you listen to the way these guys are talking about the situation, you know Pete Carroll isn't there anymore. So whatever he's saying, it's coming out through the players. When you have players in the media repeating what you're saying, repeating your message, right? They're buying into what's going down. So it just sounds and feels different, and now it looks different with those pictures being off the wall. I think this is important. I think it is important that Mike establishes himself as the alpha dog in that room. That's no disrespect to Pete Carroll. It's no disrespect to that Super Bowl team, but this is his. He has to make it his home. Pictures are down. The message is different. I like what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing.
I'm curious to see what we're going to hear as your answer for this third down. Who should be the unanimous comeback player of the year if he suits up in 2024?
It's got to be Nick Chubb. It's got to be Nick Chubb, man. He went down, I think, week two against the Steelers with that knee injury. I'm looking at his history when it comes to injuries. Obviously, in 2015, he had that horrible injury with in Georgia. Mm-hmm. In 2020, he had another knee MCL sprain. In 2021, it was his calf. In 2022, it was his chest, his rib cage, something up top was all jacked up. But then last year, he blew his knee out once again.
Bad.
The mental toughness it takes to come back from injuries alone is remarkable. The mental toughness for Nick Chubb to want to lace him up again when he was looking at the bottom of his shoe because his leg was twisted all crazy is wild to me. I got hurt and had to go to the hospital 3 or 4 times and look at x-rays and talk to doctors to convince myself in my brain that I'm good and I'm ready to go. If Nick Chubb takes any snaps on a football field next year, which he probably is because that's the way he works, he should be automatic comeback player of the year. I've never seen someone have two gruesome injuries like that and still want to play football. It's amazing what he's going through. I wish him the best of luck. Nick Chubb, go get it.
Fourth down. Have you ever been nervous when you were in middle school, high school, to see your grades?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I have as well, but only for certain classes. But it would be that thing of like, ooh. That's how I feel about this fourth down. Mm. Bleacher Report gave the Seahawks an offseason grade. I am opening up the envelope. I am looking at it now. What is the grade? Do you agree with it?
All right, so here are their key additions.
Okay.
Jerome Baker. Got Dotson, George Fant, Nick Harris, Jonathan Hankins, Rashawn Jenkins, Lincoln Tomlinson. Key losses, Jordan Brooks, Devin Bush, Uncle Will, Mario Edwards, Drew Lock, Bobby Wagner. Remaining team needs, according to Bleacher Report, you need a guard, linebacker, offensive tackle. I think you're going to get a guard number 16. Linebackers we talk about, they can get later in the draft. Not a great class. And offensive tackle, I don't think they need that. Not so much.
That was a surprising choice.
Yeah, not so much. Remaining cap space, $2.6 million. So I say all that to set it up. The grade that they received was a C. C's get degrees.
C's get degrees.
They do. And I'm okay with a C.
Yeah.
Because they're making C type of moves. They're bringing guys in and saying, okay, we don't want to commit to you long term. We know that there's some potential there. Let's sign you to a one-year deal and see what happens. George Fant, let's run this back again and see if you can tap into something and be a good backup here. Even now, Rashad Penny, you know what? Didn't work out in Philly for you. Come back here and let's see what's going. They're being very cautious when it comes to their offseason acquisitions. So now I'm waiting to see what they do in the draft. But because they're being cautious, because they didn't go out and spend a lot of money on a big name, one of the big signings that we've seen all across the league, I'm okay with a C. Because you know what you do after a C? You go up to your teacher and say, you know, how can I get this up to a B? You know what you can do? You can have a good draft in, 12, 11 days from this point, and you can move that thing up. C is fine at this point. If they would have given them any other grade, that would have been a surprise to me, honestly, because they're being very cautious with how they're moving. I'm okay with that because a lot of the pieces that you already have are good to go on offense and defense.
From the 253, not in graduate school, you need a B.
Not in graduate school.
I didn't go to graduate school.
I had my master's degree.
Good for you, 253.
Good for you, though. Big ups.
Yeah. Solid. Some of us are happy with C's, okay? Leave us alone.
That was the worst thing that happened to me in college.
Let us get this 2.1 and walk out of here alive.
The worst thing that happened to me in college when I realized I didn't have to have straight A's. I'm like, what?
See, I had better grades.
Okay. You mean I could just show up and just be average?
I'll put myself on blast. I graduated high school with like a 3.0. And this was after going to teachers and being like, are you sure I deserve this F? I graduated a college with a 3.7.
Look at you.
And I should have flipped them. I could have gotten into a really good school if I cared more about grades. And in college, nothing mattered. I just should have done internships.
So like, UW's
grades
not
don't
a really
matter.
Good school, huh?
No, UW is a very good school.
It is.
I was very fortunate. Very, very
you must go
fortunate.
To Harvard. Cornell.
No, I would never have gotten into Harvard.
Yale.
Never.
MIT.
Oh, my God. I remember someone told me in high school that UW, I was elated when I got in, and I almost didn't, and told me that UW was her safety school. You know how people would do safety schools? And
damn,
I remember thinking, like,
sheesh.
What? That's wild. The audacity.
Hey, 253 says it's a PhD. Thank you very much.
You know what, 253?
Get yours, 253.
Dr. 253.
You know what? I'm changing their name to Dr. 253.
Dr. 253.
Right now I'm doing it. Name Dr. 253 is what you are.
Thanks, Doc.
Save contact. Dr. 253. You are listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. We are going to get back to the Mariners at noon. If you guys are itching to get back to something Mariners related before then, let me know if you're like, no, I have to talk about this. Otherwise, I have some just popular stories that are going around sports that we think are really interesting. We're going to start with a reporter being under fire after a comment made to Caitlin Clark. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey. We're reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. One story is dominating your timeline, and if you haven't heard about it, we'll tell you about it now. Greg Doyle is a reporter for the Indy Star who covers a bunch of sports, but in this case, he was covering an introductory press conference for Caitlin Clark, now WNBA superstar. One of the biggest story in sports over the past two seasons, being introduced for the Indiana Fever as their number one overall pick. Tiny bit of background you need to know, because it's audio and you can't see this, is at the beginning he throws up a little heart sign with his hands, which is what Caitlin does talking to her family. So here's the exchange that has become very controversial.
Hi, Caitlin. Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here. I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me, and we'll be able to get along just fine.
Okay, so here's the deal.
It's kind of creepy.
It's a little creepy. It's creepy. Now, there have been reporters, including like Jemele Hill, lots of women in sports and lots of women in media that have come out. Yeah, but that have also come out and said like, hey, Greg has covered some important stories. Like, he's a veteran. Mm-hmm. He's covered women's sports before. That doesn't mean that this wasn't inappropriate. Like, you can't be like, oh, he's a professional. He didn't mean it. Like, no, it's creepy, Greg. It's creepy.
Here's the thing with this. Okay. Local media, you eventually develop a relationship with the athletes.
True.
Whether it's good or bad. And if you have a good relationship with athletes, there are things that you might say and do or say to an athlete that the national reporter won't do it because you don't have that type of relationship. Greg ain't got that type of relationship yet. Here's another thing. All right. Let's not act like she's not a woman. That factors into this. All right. You, as a man, at least this is the way I move. You can disagree with me or not. There are certain things I will not say or do around or to a woman because she is a woman. Same thing with anything else. There are things I will not say and do to an older white man because he's an older white man, or an older black man, or a younger white man, or so forth. Like, you change the way you approach certain people in certain situations just based off of little things. Whether you realize it or agree with it or not, that's just how at least I move. So in this situation, Greg should know, man. This is one of the greatest college athletes of all time. This is one of your first interactions with her. It should be as professional as possible. Now, if you develop a relationship with her, you guys got an inside joke, you throw up the heart, she throws up the heart, it's different. She ain't played one basketball game yet for the Indiana Fever, and I would assume you don't have that type of relationship
with
her.
Which would be inappropriate for a reporter to have anyway.
Anyway, yeah. But, I mean, like, I just watched a whole bunch of clips of Blake Griffin because he retired the other day, and the way he interacts with reporters is different than any other athlete. That's his personality. He accepts that. He invites that. You don't know her like that yet, okay? And she is a woman. There's a certain type of decorum and respect that you have to give a woman just out of respect. And also, she's a professional athlete. She's not a kid anymore. She is not in youth sports. She's getting paid to do this. There's a certain amount of respect that needs to happen.
Right.
If y'all have a friendship and y'all are cool, then okay, but I doubt that's where they are right now.
From the 206, oh geez, I'm a woman. Just want to say, quit making more of things than they were meant to be. He made a mistake and apologized. Stop judging. Well, I'm a woman and I'm not deeply offended by it, nor do I think that Greg is a bad person. I don't think that there are a ton of bad people anywhere. I think most people try to be good. I also think it's very common to make mistakes and learn from them. And what I am saying as a reporter and a woman is that this is inappropriate and that I have to be. And here's the thing, too. Early in my career, I was a 25-year-old woman, 26-year-old woman interviewing 25, 26-year-old men and was very cognizant of how I was acting, what I was wearing, very careful not to look like I was flirting. I had to be very aware at all times of not just the dynamic of being a professional reporter, but what optics might look like. Greg isn't like hitting on Caitlin. That's not what he's doing. What he's doing is not fully treating her like a professional. That's the issue. No, like, I know that there are some people that are like, this is sexual harassment. And maybe to them it is. And who am I to tell them how to feel? What I think the bigger problem is infantilizing her and not treating her. Like, ask yourself, would this be a weird exchange if he did it to Jimmy Butler? If the answer is yes,
it would be,
which it should be because it would be. Then you need to treat this professional athlete the way you would anyone else. Hey, Caitlin, and then just ask the question you want to ask. Or, hey, Caitlin, you throw up the heart all the time. What's that about, you know, to your family? Or, you know, like, it's not random. It's not inappropriate to ever make a joke. But I think that when you can see clearly that this would be a weird exchange if the genders were switched, then he shouldn't have done it. It doesn't mean he's an evil person, but like, it's okay to say like, come on, Greg.
And he apologized. We're not saying that he's a bad person. He apologized. We're just pointing out that this was kind of weird.
I've seen
reporters, journalists who do have that type of relationship because I've covered this player for 10 years. You know, you start an interview. What up, dog? What's up with so-and-so? How's your dog doing? Or something like that. There's something that happens over the years that you cover an athlete. It's just first impression. No, you treat her like the number one pick in the draft and respect it.
Just so you guys know, Greg wrote a column in the Indy Star apologizing to Caitlin. And at first I was a little, he started it by saying, I'm awkward with all people, including all these people, and they're all men. And I was like, Greg, don't dig that hole. Put down the shovel, Greg. but then he ended it by saying, basically I was on the wrong side for the oldest reason, ignorance. You can say I should have known better, and I do, but here we are. All I can say is, like, I was wrong, and I'm so sorry. So, credit to him for apologizing.
He knows he messed up.
Yeah.
He can move on. It's fine.
Exactly. All right, next story here. A great post game from an awkward press conference to a funny one. Rays reliever Pete Fairbanks was pretty hard on himself after blowing a save against the Angels on Wednesday. Take a listen to his interview with reporters post game.
Was it just a matter of command, location, selection, anything specific?
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck. So, you know, we're going to try and rectify that. But for right now, I'm going to be pretty pissed about it.
Where do you kind of go from here? Is it looking at tape? Is it going through mechanics? Where do you kind of go from here?
You tell me. I've tried that. If you got an answer, I'd love to hear. Just, you know, not going to let it beat me up for, I'll maybe give it till 10. It's 9:44 right now. We'll give it 16 minutes of salt, and then we'll, you know, get back on the bump and figure it out.
It was an all-encompassing suck.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
When I hear that, I hear no command, no confidence. I mean, he pitched an inning, gave up 3 hits, 2 earned runs. He walked 2. Yeah, it was a bad day at the office, and those days are going to happen. And that's the worst part about being an athlete is that you will get publicly critiqued, and you have to answer questions when you have a bad day at the office.
Mm-hmm. Next and last story here in the timeline, the long, strange trip of Arizona Coyotes legend Shane Doan getting reunited with his retired jersey banner, prior to the team's final ever home game. So via a Twitter user app at @cap_caveman. Let's recap here. The Coyotes left Shane Doan's retirement banner behind at their arena. Back in Glendale.
The previous arena.
Then it was thrown in the trash. Then, he says, a hockey-loving king found it, kept it, and gave it back to Doan tonight. So congratulations being reunited with that. How did that end up in the trash? How?
That was someone who's cleaning up who
it's
just
true.
doesn't know hockey the way we know hockey.
I really don't know that kind of oversight. Like, that kind of oversight is wild to me. The Arizona Coyotes just keep kind of kicking themselves.
How you leave it, though? How do you leave? First of all, how do you leave it? It was already hanging up, right?
Yes. So your most important player. He spent 20 of his 21 seasons in the NHL with Arizona. He's the franchise's leader in nearly every major category. This is your most important player ever.
Don't you? You know when you go to an Airbnb, don't you like walk through the house before you leave to make sure you got everything? They didn't walk through the house before they left to make sure they got everything.
Can I ask you something in like the final 10 seconds here?
Sure.
Have you ever been to an Airbnb when the people that rented out the Airbnb are still there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't.
My friends went on a trip to, Vancouver, BC or something, and they rented out what they thought was an Airbnb. They were going to have a great time, not have parties, but they're chilling. And it turns out that this is people who are living there, and they just rented out the top floor of a home.
And they're just chilling.
And they were constantly telling them, can you guys turn down music? And they were like, what?
That's weird.
that's all. All right, Ryan Roland-Smith joining us at noon. Talking M's. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
What about Bryce Miller's start? And do the Mariners have a chance for another sweep here? Ryan Roland-Smith going to join us in 15 minutes. Before we get to that, what 3 Seahawks had to say about Mike McDonald's first offseason. There's been so much chatter and so little of it has been about the on-the-field product because, frankly, there hasn't been one yet. This guy's got a lot to prove. First-time head coach. But there has been a lot of talk about what he could mean, what his background could mean, what his expertise could mean. So let's start with Leonard Williams, a defensive player that's going to be in that defense. He talks about being especially excited to play for a guy who oversaw the best defense in the NFL last year.
I mean, I just love that he's a defensive-minded coach. I mean, he clearly had had the top defense in the NFL last year. And, you know, playing for a defensive head coach really excites me. you know, I'm playing for a guy that knows that, you know, games are won on the defensive side of the ball. And that's how I think. You know, I think we have a great offense. I think we have explosive playmakers, and I trust that side of the ball. But from any defensive player, you know, I want them to think that we're going to be the ones that's going to win the game. And I think, you know, Mike kind of shares that same mindset.
Bump, what do you think about Leonard's comments?
First thing that sticks out is games are won on the defensive side of the ball.
I noticed that too.
Games are won.
Just boldly. You know what? And you're welcome.
You know, championships are won by quarterbacks driving the ball down the field. But we're not going to go there. What I hear is a guy who is excited for a change. He left the New York Football Giants, didn't have a bye week because of the timing of his trade over to the Seahawks, got to know Pete Carroll for a bit, and this is going to be his third head coach in less than a year, right? And I hear a guy who's excited for change and a guy who sees the potential here, or else he wouldn't have signed back here. Mm-hmm. And Leonard Williams was one of the hotter free agents of the offseason, and he decided to come back to the Seattle Seahawks. And I think that was that before or after Mike McDonald?
Oh, I think after.
All right. So if it was after, he saw the change that was coming, where that young man and Mike McDonald was coming from with the Baltimore defense. I'm sure he turned on the film and seen how Matabuke was being used and Clowney and in that box and what he did, and goes, all right, I want to hang around and see what's going to happen here. And it's refreshing. Three head coaches in less than a year for this dude has to be a lot to take in.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why he chose the Seahawks. He could have went anywhere else. Then Leonard Williams would have been picked up by any team that had cap space and needed defensive linemen. But he chose the Seattle Seahawks. And I think that that speaks loud about just Mike McDonald, what he thinks of him, and what he thinks the potential of this defense can be.
I do, too. He talked about other relationships that he had here, but he's made it clear that having had someone in here who's a defensive mind, a really smart defensive mind, someone who was heavily pursued as a head coach by other teams, and someone who oversaw the best defense, I don't know what it's like in that building as a player, what kind of culture Mike McDonald is building. It sure seems like you are going from a deeply player-friendly head coach to someone very different. That being said, if I were doing a fitness class and my trainer had a six-pack, I'd be like, let me know what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be a harder workout. I'm not going to like it. And this isn't me saying that Pete Carroll isn't a great defensive mm-hmm. mind, by the way. He won a Super Bowl here. Mike McDonald has not. But look, Mike McDonald hasn't proven anything as a head coach. He has proven a lot as a defensive coordinator. And I would be curious. Part of me as a defensive player would be like, all right, well, this is new to me. Maybe this isn't always fun. But what do you got for me, coach? Because your defense went a lot further than mine did.
Yeah, exactly. You put on the film and you go, he got those dudes playing. You also look at the personnel and says he has the guys to run that defense. And you have to imagine yourself there and you imagine the pieces that are going to be around you. But the unknown can be scary, or it can be refreshing or revitalizing. And I think that's the way he's seeing it. It's like, look, this is a new start. Let's start all over. He clearly knows what he's doing. The defense was good in Michigan when he was there. Mm-hmm. Defense was good in Baltimore. Let's see if he can bring that here. He's looking around him and saying, we got a couple corners that are nice. The D-line is okay. Maybe draft somebody there. You have to look at this situation with an open mind. And I think that's what he's doing. The possibilities are endless. It's going to get real in August, but right now the possibilities are endless.
Joe in Bellevue saying, is the implication Pete was not a defensive-minded coach? I think that what Leonard is saying is that compared to other places he could have gone, he would have wanted to go somewhere where there was a defensive-minded head coach. I think the comparison is, mm-hmm. as a free agent, there were options, but I like that this is a defensive-minded head coach. I think that's mm-hmm. what he's getting at. Let's go to Devin Witherspoon, who had a conversation with Mike McDonald about his season and his potential.
Yeah, I look back over the year and see the stuff that I can improve on, the stuff that I did well, the stuff I didn't do well. So when you look back at over the year, it's exciting because I had a good year, but it could be a lot better. And then that's what Coach keeps telling me every day. He's like, you had a good year, but you got so much more potential. And I can't wait to exploit that. So
I don't think he's wrong.
I
don't think he's wrong.
No, he's not wrong. Devin Witherspoon, if you ever, I don't care what type of season you have, your rookie season, if you think you have it all figured out, then good luck. You're not going to last very long in this league. Devin Witherspoon doesn't have it all figured out, but he started off his season, I think, not as good as it can get, but better than most rookies. So for a guy to come in and McDonald and just hold him accountable and say, mm-hmm. look, man, you balled out. one of the best rookies in the league, but there's still some things that you can work on. It's important that he does things like that to keep guys hungry. Once you're complacent, it's a wrap. And that's one thing. We talk a lot about Aaron Rodgers, man, but he don't seem complacent to me. It seems like I'm going to do a whole bunch of stuff off the field. I'm going to point the finger when it comes to off the field distractions. But I'm still going to show up at 40-something years old after tearing my Achilles because I still got something to prove. I'm still hungry. It's important to keep that hunger. Once you lose the hunger, once you lose the edge, you are done in this league. So Mike McDonald, I think he's done that for a lot of players. To be like, look, all right, I don't know this guy. He's not Pete Carroll. I don't know what he's going to say. I don't know what to expect. He's going to hold me accountable. Therefore, I'm going to keep my edge. And I know he means chasing edges in a whole bunch of different ways, but here's another way to chase an edge. Hold guys accountable. They keep that edge.
We heard from two defensive guys. Last one is offensive tackle Charles Cross.
I love him. It's like he brings a tenacity in the building. He's very blunt, to the point guy. And he just wants to get a job done. Get the job done at the end of the day.
Sounds a little old school almost.
Yeah, I like it. Blunt. There's tenacity there. That's the type of coach that I would want to play for. And I don't think Pete Carroll was extremely blunt. And I don't think he had tenacity like that. He had his own type of tenacity. But he's 36 years old. When I first started coaching high school football, when I was 25 years old, I had energy for days. And now that I'm dang near 40, the energy is different. Tenacity is still there. Energy is just a bit different. I think they're refreshed by that.
All right, let's get to the Mariners. They have the potential, the opportunity to have a second sweep of the season. But what's got to go right against the Rockies? Ryan Roland-Smith joining us next.